This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Winnipeg out of their own zone, and Trouba fights off a check up the middle of the ice to the near side for Laine. Winds up, shoot, stopped by Gibson. Rebound! He's pushed out in front of shot. They score! Jack Roslovic will tie it with his first ever NHL goal. How about that? Great rush by Trouba, and Jack Roslovic will finish it off. And just like that, Winnipeg has come back to tie it at 3.
From Thursday night in Anaheim, Jack Roslovic with the tying goal. Unfortunately for Jets fans, they fall in the shootout by a 4-3 margin to the Anaheim Ducks, wrapping up the four-game period of time between their mandated player break and the All-Star break with a 3-0-1 record. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning, and it is the rarest of rare Saturdays. The show that does not take calls is going to take calls in the final hour of today's program. 11 a.m., you can start prepping yourself, you can start writing out your scripts, you can start practicing your dialing fingers. 11 a.m., we're going to open up the phone lines for your calls for an hour, the last hour of the show dedicated to your calls, anything under the sun related to the Winnipeg Jets.
You're settled down, and you got to stop saying that we're the show that doesn't take any calls if we're taking calls.
Well, that's what makes it ironic.
And we used to take calls quite often.
Never did we ever take calls quite often.
Early in the show, we
never
used to.
Not once. Maybe if we've taken calls more than 3 times in a calendar year, I would say that is unusual for us.
I think we should be taking calls more often.
Well, I think that you should be out of the show more often, so we're gonna have to agree to disagree on this one. That voice you heard, of course, is my main man Ezra Ginsberg, propped up in the middle between the man on my far left. That's Dave Manuk. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this wintry Saturday in July. It sort of feels like
July.
A good July day, January day, pardon me, it's not
July.
Yeah, January, got a little ahead of myself. I was looking forward to summer a little bit too soon with all that snow on the ground. Good to see you both on this Saturday morning.
Yeah, what's going on, boys? It's All-Star break, lots to talk about, though.
Lots to talk about, certainly. A good stretch for the Winnipeg Jets in between their player break and the All-Star break. It's sort of been a weird calendar month of January when you look at the schedule, the
Very
5
bizarre.
Days off. Yeah, 5 days off, 4 games, 4 days off, and then they're back starting Tuesday, of course, with that 10-game homestand.
and then we move into the Bell MTS place.
Yeah, and then basically the month of February, we just live at the arena.
I look, there's one stretch where I'm at Bell MTS place 9 straight days.
Between the Jets and the Moose?
Jets, Moose, and the skills competition.
Have you asked them to see if maybe you can get a locker or something? Maybe a dressing, maybe a dressing
room
or something?
I may or not have a dressing room. It's
okay,
fine.
There you go.
You know? Plus I have that comfy cot underneath my seat in seat 54 or 52.
Yeah, whatever number we are up in the box. Anyways.
Have they found your plaque at Earl's, by the way?
No, they have not.
How upset are you about this?
I'm not that upset because we are in negotiations to bring back plaque 2.0.
Wow, it's just like when the Jets came back, only way more pathetic.
Well, I'd say way more important, but okay. Sure.
It's a matter of opinion, clearly. Anyways, let's talk about the Winnipeg Jets, that 3-0-1 record, the loss in Anaheim on Thursday night. That was a hell of a hockey game. I mean, if you're a casual hockey fan, you're flipping on that game and you're staying there because that was a game between two heavyweight teams. The Jets, who, of course, have been towards the top of the Western Conference all season long, and the Anaheim Ducks, who are not yet in a playoff spot, who were banged up so much in the first half of the year. But if you see, you know, that game, if the Ducks end up qualifying for the playoffs, boy, you do not want to play that Anaheim Ducks team in the first round or the second round. That's a dangerous team, and that was a great hockey game between two, what I would describe as pretty evenly matched teams on Thursday night.
Yeah, and I thought the game against San Jose was also a very good game, and, mm-hmm. You know, 3 of these 4 games, you pick up 7 of a possible 8 points. And with the exception, the game against Anaheim, you know, you get wins. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, these two teams, I mean, they have a history going back to 2015 when they played in the playoffs. And, mm-hmm. You know, all, you know, one goal games here, Drew, the last four games. And it was a good response coming out of that mandatory 5-day break, because the games in Chicago and St. Paul were very disappointing, not getting any points. But, you know, this game took a toll on players. You saw John Gibson leave the game after Blake Wheeler accidentally slid into him, and Ben Chiarot, you know, took that shot
off of
the face.
Thank God he's wearing a visor.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so it was a very physical game, and, you know, the Jets could have easily won that game. I thought the Ducks were very dominant in that third period and in overtime, obviously with the Jets not getting any shots on net. But, you know, a very impressive stretch of four games here heading into the All-Star break, and something that you can build off of. And we have to mention how dominant the Jets have been against the Pacific Division. They just, they can't lose right now to, you know, the likes of the Ducks, the Sharks, and other teams in that division. So, you know, you almost kind of wish, if you're the Jets, that you were in the Pacific Division with how dominant they've been. I think the record is something like 14-3. So, a very entertaining game in Anaheim, and it was one of those games, you know, that you would call a grinding game, and Paul Maurice did call it that as well. And, you know, very, very impressive that they were able to almost sweep all four of these games.
Dave, your thoughts on Thursday night, your thoughts on the stretch of play for the Winnipeg Jets in between the player break and the All-Star break. At first, it started with the team not really being able to find any offense. You know, the one goal in regulation against Calgary, you know, that was last Saturday. The one goal, the 1-0 victory against the Canucks at home on Sunday. And then they go west, and they're all of a sudden able to get the offense clicking again. You know, the San Jose game, of course, was a bit of an offensive explosion. And then three goals again against Anaheim on Thursday night.
Yeah, I think that's something to be expected now. I mean, the players have talked about how it becomes a more grinding game after the, you know, towards the All-Star break and after the All-Star break, as teams are prepping and tightening up as they get closer to the playoffs and push for the playoffs. So you're probably going to expect, in my mind, probably lower scoring games than the higher kind of back and forth action that we saw in Anaheim specifically. But no, I think it's very good. I think the reality is that this team, it's funny because Patrick Laine, who's a young guy, doesn't want to take any time off. But the truth is, it's a pretty banged up Jets team right now. And there's no question, like, you know, we had saw Tobias Enstrom not skate and be, you know, probable. And we saw Dmitry Kulikov be a possible. Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is, there's, you know, they didn't send Tucker Pullman to the Moose, which leads me to believe that, you know, Dmitry Kulikov isn't 100%. Because the fact of the matter is, you recall Tucker Pullman. He doesn't play, but they sent back Lemieux and they sent back Hutchinson, right? So,
but sorry for interrupting you. Could that be a function to some extent of, I mean, the Moose All-Star break starts, they played last night, they won in Laval, they played tonight in Laval again, and then it's the All-Star break?
Yep.
So could it be a function of Tucker Pullman playing Thursday night in Anaheim, you got to fly all cross-country to play, you know, to Laval. You're not going to play him on Friday because of, you know, the flying time and everything. It'd probably be too much to have him travel from Anaheim all the way to Laval and suit up Friday. So you're talking about one game on Saturday and then the break. So does that maybe function in there to their thinking about not sending him back? They need bodies on the ice potentially for practice for the Jets on Monday?
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, you can always incorporate somebody else potentially into that spot. It's more a function of, yes, I think that's further to my point. I think the point is that there's a concern with Pullman. And again, why do you send Lemieux then, right? Now, because you're not going to play Lemieux, there's no intention of playing him in the game on Tuesday, but potentially you want to play Pullman. So you hold him out because you don't want to take a chance. So I think this is what I'm getting at is that the All-Star break comes at a time when guys can use it to heal up, rest. And the reality is they're not going to have to worry about travel. So there's no excuse anymore after this game now, because the Jets are here for the next 3 weeks. So we're definitely going to, you know, have that opportunity to kind of not have to worry about getting on a plane, flying to another time zone. They're here. And we've seen how dominant they've been at Bell MTS Place this season. So the fact of the matter is, to me, I just think it's a good opportunity, even though some of the younger guys might not, quote, feel like they need it. It's a good opportunity just to kind of heal up for a few days, rest up, and then get ready to have a big stretch drive.
And, you know, Dave, you mentioned the injuries. And, you know, Mark Scheifele, since he's been out, the Jets have won, what, 8 of 12 games? 8-2-2, I believe the record is. Right? So, I mean, if we were talking about this last year, guys, you know, number one center Mark Scheifele being out of the lineup, I mean, this could potentially derail their season. And the Jets really haven't missed a beat. They were really good here in this last little stretch, with the exception of, I would say, maybe those couple of games in St. Paul and Chicago. And they managed to get 7 of 8 points here. And you know, Scheifele's going to be back in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we believe, unless there's been some type of setback. But it's been really impressive what they've done without their number one center in the lineup.
No, yeah, you're 100% right. And I was going to say, and also the fact that they've lost Lowry, too. So you've lost your 1C, yep, your 3C, and you've managed to keep on rolling. And as you just said, they're 8-2-2 during that stretch since Scheifele went down, which was December 27th.
Yeah, against
the Oilers. So, I mean, think about that. If you could say you're going to switch your top winger to the center role, you're going to lose your top center against teams that you need a big center to be able to, you know, in theory, dominate and still do as well as they've done against, you know, San Jose, who's maybe not necessarily a peak team right now. But the Ducks were healthy. I mean, that was a healthy Ducks team. Now, you wonder why Ryan Getzlaff decided to clear the puck onto a Jack Roslovic's stick the way he did without looking and the no-look clear, yeah, right onto Roslovic's stick. But good for Jack Roslovic to get his first NHL goal. I thought that he played a pretty good game overall, getting that move up to the first line.
Yeah, Roslovic was great. And, you know, it looked like he was going to pick up his first NHL point on Laine's goal, Dave. I also don't know how they missed that high-sticking call on Getzlaff, because it was clear that he clipped Buff. But regardless, the reffing, you know, in that game really wasn't a factor, fortunately.
Well, it was that was definitely a missed call by the officials there, where Buff, who's, you know, 8 feet tall, somehow gets a high stick in the face, and that's not deemed a high stick. But obviously that was didn't factor into the result of the game, the final result. The Jets looked, I thought, for the last, the second half of the third period after they tied the game, and overtime, they just looked like they had nothing left in the tank on Thursday night. So getting it to overtime, I thought, was, you know, certainly a good result for the team. You saw that neither team was funny, though. I mean, I tweeted this out with about 5 minutes to go in the game on Thursday.
Yeah, that was funny.
That, you know, there's 5 minutes left. It's a non-divisional game, and it's tied. When will both teams stop playing for the victory and start playing to be content to go to overtime? And it basically was with 5 minutes left. Nobody sent more than one guy in. Nobody did anything that was the least bit risky offensively. It basically, the game ground to a halt with about 5 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah, Drew, and it's to be expected that the Jets were going to be tired. I mean, this wasn't an easy stretch. 4 games in 6 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, 3 of those games on the road, and the Jets have not been as good on the road as they've been at home. And, you know, they've picked up, wins here. And, you know, it was really impressive to me what they did, because you can say whatever you want about the Sharks and the Ducks, but there's still a really good chance in my mind that both of these teams, or at the very least one of these teams, go to the playoffs. And that's because after Vegas, I mentioned this on Wednesday's show, Drew, I mean, that division's completely wide open.
Sure.
I mean, L.A., Calgary, San Jose, Anaheim, any of these teams can still make the playoffs in the Pacific Division. We expect 5 to make it from the Central because it's a better division. But these were desperate teams. Make no mistake. I mean, the Ducks needed that point more than the Jets did, but that didn't mean that the Jets weren't fighting to get those 2 points either.
No, absolutely. The Pacific Division, Anaheim and L.A., Calgary, San Jose, 2 of those 4 are going to make it into the top 3 in the division. There's only 2 points separating those 4 teams. And it's not like, you know, some of the other, you know, divisions. Oh, I'm only 4 points back and there's 12 guys ahead of me. These 4 teams are battling for the 2 spots in the Pacific. And, you know, certainly you do not want to see the Ducks, I think, come playoff time if you're any team in the Western Conference. They look like they're getting rounding into form, the form that almost had them in the Stanley Cup Finals last year, you know, losing out to Nashville late in the playoffs, of course.
Yeah, and they're typically one of the strongest teams in the second half of the season. If you look back over the last 3 years, the Ducks are consistently a very strong second half team. So I agree. I mean, I've always thought that this team was going to be a playoff team, even with Kessler and Getzlaff injured earlier on in the season. So you have to look out for them for sure if you're the rest of the Pacific.
But if you're the Winnipeg Jets, things are still pretty hunky-dory. You're atop the Western Conference, pardon me, you're atop the Central Division standings, a point ahead of the Predators. Predators, of course, with 3 games in hand. The St. Louis Blues, 3 points behind the Jets with a game in hand on the Blues. And after the break, you have the 10-game homestand at home, probably relatively unheard of 10-game homestand, where the Jets are 17-3-1
on home ice. I hope the homestand's at home.
The homestand is at home. Yes, it is. They start on Tuesday night against the Tampa Bay Lightning. When we come back, we talk about the Jets' opponent on Tuesday, the Lightning. Maybe touch on the All-Star game as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Little. And Nikolai Ehlers out. Braden Point with a little bit of room. Point in on Hellebuck. Scores! Braden Point got in behind everyone. Brian Little tried to stay with him. Could not. And the Jets will pick up a point, but they go to 0-5 in overtime this year.
Dennis Bayak with the call. That from Saturday, December 9th, the Jets and the Lightning. The first time those two teams did battle this season, the Lightning winning in overtime. As you hear there, Braden Point, all-star. Braden Point is a replacement all-star for, who's he replacing, Taylor Hall?
Victor Hedman.
Victor Hedman. Oh, okay. I'm not sure how a forward replaces a defenseman, but regardless.
Well, he's replacing another player on his team.
Right, I know, but don't you need to replace Victor Hedman with another defenseman for the All-Star Game rosters? I don't know. Doesn't matter. I don't really care about the All-Star Game anyways. In any event, Braden Point scoring for the Lightning in overtime on December 9th. They defeated the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets look for revenge on Tuesday night, the start of the 10-game homestand. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The homestand starts off with a bang against the best team in the NHL this season, the Tampa Bay Lightning, currently atop the Atlantic Division. Boston Bruins beginning to make a bit of a chase there, though. Mm-hmm. Only 5 points back with two games in hand. Lightning 34-12-3 for 71 points. 5-4-1 in their last 10, but they've won 3 in a row, so prior to that they had been struggling with a 2-4-1 record in their previous 7 games. Lightning team a little banged up. No Victor Hedman, no Andre Palat. You know, coming off of the All-Star game at home and all the festivities that are associated with it, you wonder if the Jets might be catching the Lightning at a decent time coming back right off the All-Star break.
Yeah, well, the Jets don't have Mark Scheifele right now either, so
fair.
You could say the same thing for the Lightning, right? But, you know, it's a point well taken, Drew. I mean, Andre Palat, by the way, it looked like he was only going to be out 2 weeks. It looks like now he might be out for up to 2 months.
Yeah, six to 8 weeks, I believe.
Right, so Victor Hedman, you know, is also out of the lineup right now, and, you know, his point totals have actually suffered a little bit this year, but that's because Mikhail Sergachev has emerged, and he's actually taken away some of those power play opportunities from Hedman. But Victor Hedman, let's be honest, guys, he's still one of the top defensemen in the NHL. And in that sense, you know, you're going to take a guy off the ice. Well, they're not taking him off the ice. The Jets aren't. But Hedman's not going to be on the ice for the Lightning. And, you know, this Lightning team, to me, has been, you know, arguably one of the best stories along with the Vegas Golden Knights, because you forget the Tampa Bay Lightning made a big push to get into the playoffs last year. And, you know, this year, you know, Steven Stamkos, the season could not be going better for Steven Stamkos. Mm-hmm. And Nikita Kucherov had his breakout season last year. Stamkos and Kucherov, for me, is the best 1-2 punch in the league. And also, Vladislav Nemestikov, a guy that's kind of flown under the radar early on in his career, he's a really good player, and he's having a career year. And, you know, you mentioned earlier Braden Point, who scored the overtime winner against the Jets earlier in the season, Drew. His rookie year was last year, former Moose Jaw Warrior, of course. Moose Jaw also number one in the Western Hockey League right now. Braden Point's an excellent player, so lots of depth. Yanni Gourde is another guy. Mm-hmm. He's on that third line. Yanni Gourde is having a great year, first year in the NHL. So up and down the lineup, I mean, you've got Ryan Callahan and Cedric Paquette on your fourth line, arguably the best fourth line in the league. I think Anaheim's also got a pretty good fourth line, especially like they had the other night with Corey Perry on that fourth line. So, mm-hmm. I mean, up and down the lineup, you know, the Lightning have tons of skill and talent. And we have to mention Andrei Vasilevskiy. I mean, he's arguably the Vezina favorite right now. I'm not talking about, you know, the Professional Hockey Writers Association poll. I'm just talking about, you know, how well he's played with the wins and all of that. And really, this was the year that he's the bona fide number one goalie. And last year, of course, he played 50 games. But this was the first year where, really, it was his net. And he's still a young goaltender. He's had a great year for the Lightning. You know, John Cooper deserves a lot of credit for not only having this team first place in the Eastern Conference, but they've stayed there, and they really haven't had any hiccups throughout the year. So it's going to be a big test for the Jets next Tuesday.
Yeah, it is going to be a tremendous test for the Jets. And, you know, what's so fascinating about the Lightning is, you know, Stamkos and Kucherov get all the publicity, because rightfully so. They're, you know, two of the best players in the entire NHL. They've been absolutely dominant this season. Kucherov with 63 points in 49 games. Stamkos 58 points in 49 games. But the guys you mentioned, Ezzy, there, when you were doing a rundown of the roster, the Braden Points, who are flying a bit under the radar, unless you're, you know, a real committed hockey fan, I would say he's just under a point a game. You know, Nemestnikov had a great start to the year playing with Kucherov and Stamkos. Tyler Johnson, you know, used to be sort of one of the triplets in Tampa Bay. He's taken a bit of a step back, at least profile-wise, but he's bounced back and had a very solid year after a couple of, I would describe as average years for the Lightning. They just go so deep, both up front and on the back end, that it's anytime you can really get a point or 2 points, take a clean victory off the Lightning, you've really accomplished something impressive.
Yeah, and you know, Tyler Johnson, you know, was a guy who, you know, 3 years ago had a 70-point season. Last year, he had a rough season, missed some games, and this year he started off the season actually on the third line. And now that they've broken up Steven Stamkos and Nikita Kucherov, he's actually been on the top line mm-hmm. at times, and their lines changed a lot. John Cooper's not afraid to mix up those lines. But to me, guys, Yanni Gourde has been a story that I don't think has been talked about enough. This is a guy who's undrafted, 5'9", kind of reminds you of Marty St. Louis.
I think we have Brian Engblom coming up next segment to talk about the Lightning. I think I made that same comparison when we had Brian on back in December, saying that the parallels, you know, from Quebec, undrafted, you know, smaller. I mean, the parallels are uncanny.
And he's on your third line. We talked about that. Alex Killorn, a guy that was a staple of the top six a few years back when the Lightning went all the way to the Stanley Cup final. And now Killorn is on that third line. So there's a lot of depth on this Lightning team, even without Palat and Hedman in the lineup. So, you know, your point is well taken, you know, that the Jets are going to face a team that doesn't have two of their top players. But mm-hmm. Still a very skilled team up and down.
Yeah, no, they're definitely a dangerous team. They're the you know, preeminent team in the Eastern Conference. Certainly everyone expects them to be the Stanley Cup representative out of the East just because they've been so good for so long this season. You know,
I wouldn't read too much into that, Drew, because how many people thought the Capitals were going to go all the way last year, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, regular season is regular season, and you know, the playoff matchups matter so very much, and they end up being such a determining factor.
You're right. No, I'm not, you know, trying to contradict what you're saying, because the Lightning are absolutely the favorite, but when they come out with these polls, you know, 50 games into the season and say, you know, who's the favorite right now? Well, I mean, it doesn't matter until the playoffs start.
Right, but the key is right now. It's a snapshot of the present.
Of course, you're going to look at the top of the standings, and whoever's at the top of the standings is going to be the favorite.
You would think so. Usually that's the way it works.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, and you're completely entitled.
It's kind of meaningless to me.
Yeah, I mean, they're certainly not gospel.
If you ask any hockey fan, or I would say 9 of 10 hockey fans are going to tell you, well, Tampa Bay's the favorite to go to the Stanley Cup final. Why wouldn't they be?
They've been the best team in the league all year.
It's kind of an obvious answer is what I'm saying.
You're 100% right. It is definitely somewhat of an obvious answer. This Lightning team, you know, the power play is certainly dangerous. Of course, 4th in the NHL is their power play. You know, the penalty kill, 21st, so maybe a little bit of room for improvement there. But really, you know, 1st in goals for, 4th in goals against, they're everything that you want in a hockey team right now. And, from the Jets' perspective, though, I think you're probably, you know, you start off that homestand, which is going to be such a crucial part of the season, that you almost you start off with a bang, and that's, I think, it snaps you out of your all-star break doldrums pretty quickly, in that, you know, you don't get to ease into the post all-star break with a game against a weaker opponent. You get the best of the best, and you probably want to be ready to go when puck drops shortly after 7 o'clock on Tuesday night.
Yeah, and I mean, again, we've seen how dominant Winnipeg has been at home. So I think that you're right, Drew. I mean, it doesn't get easier. And the fact of the matter is, if you want to be a team that people are talking about as a Stanley Cup contender, then you have to be able to take on all comers. And you can't just say, well, you know, we're good against the weaker teams in the division, or, you know, in the league, I should say. But I think the Jets have shown that they can hang with the big boys, and they can play with the big boys. And Tampa is going to be a good test to kick off this homestand. But, I mean, again, like I said, you have to make hay when you have the opportunity. And this is a big opportunity for the Winnipeg Jets to, one, have the advantage of not traveling, and two, really, like I said, they've made Bell MTS Place a dominant place to be again. Again, take advantage of those opportunities that are presented to you.
Who do you expect to start in goal for the Jets on Tuesday?
Well, I mean, that's the big matzo ball, because right now it's like a goalie carousel. We've got Jamie Phillips, who was recalled because, of course, you need two goalies at the NHL level. So yeah. Michael Hutchinson was assigned to the Moose because he's going to the All-Star game.
So the NHL All-Star game on Monday night in Utica?
Utica. But yeah. So the thought, Mitch Peacock was talking about it yesterday on the broadcast, so Eric Comrie played last night. The and they called up Colton Finney from the ECHL Jacksonville Icemen to back Eric Comrie up because they didn't have enough players. They didn't have Michael Hutchinson and Brendan Lemieux in time yesterday.
Right.
So you've got Michael Hutchinson is the expectation. I wasn't sure if he would play today or if they were going to hold him out like the way the last time they sent him down. The expectation is from Mitch was saying that they're going to play Michael Hutchinson today. I'm assuming Eric Comrie will back him up and Colton Finney would get reassigned to the Jacksonville Icemen. Then you've got Michael Hutchinson traveling to Utica while the Moose go on their break. Michael Hutchinson travels to Utica tomorrow, plays in the skills competition on Sunday. The game is on Monday. So he's missing practice with the Jets on Monday. And he would, I would assume, I don't think there's going to be a flight late enough to leave Utica to get to Winnipeg on Monday night. So unless they're privately flying him back, then the reality is he's not going to be in Winnipeg till sometime on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have Michael Hutchinson traveling the day of that game, potentially not getting in. I mean, I'm assuming he'll get in an early flight. Maybe he makes practice the morning skate that day. But, you know, and versus Connor Hellebuck, who flew in on Sunday night. And Paul Maurice, in his comments on Wednesday, people took them as Hellebuck's not playing. But if you parse through the language, he said right now. Right now being, I don't plan on having Connor Hellebuck play right now, but we'll see with the travel with Hutchinson, I'm assuming. And we don't know about Mason, right? Mason could always...
Hellebuck's going to start against the Lightning.
See, that would be my expectation, too, simply based on the travel from Hutchinson. But, you know, I don't know.
We'll know more, of course, on, well, probably not till Tuesday. Monday won't tell us a ton, unless Steve Mason's on the ice for the Jets and fully healthy for practice. Then that might give us some,
right.
some insight.
And that's what I was thinking, is that there's always the possibility that you have Steve Mason healthy, because that's the $64,000 question right now, is what's his status? Because while everybody's assuming it's Hutchinson, we haven't heard about Mason. If he has a full practice on Monday with the team...
Then I could see him getting the start
right.
on Tuesday.
Maybe Colton Finney's going to start against the Lightning.
Hey, you never know. I mean, he get the big call.
When we come back, Brian Engblom's going to join us more about the Jets' opponent, the Lightning, on Tuesday night. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour is come and gone. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk here with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Brian Engblom. Brian is an analyst on Tampa Bay Lightning broadcast. Brian, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
Doing very well, Brian. How about yourself?
Great.
That's great. We're glad that you're able to join us on this Saturday morning.
Brian, we've missed you at the Grove.
Thanks.
Brian, obviously brought you on to talk about the Lightning. It's a big weekend in Tampa Bay with the All-Star weekend. And what's it called? Gasparilla? Is that the Pirate Festival?
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. I'm just on the edge of downtown right now, as a matter of fact, fighting my way through traffic, which is horrific because it is All-Star weekend and because it is Gasparilla. Gasparilla is basically Mardi Gras on boats, and people wear beads, and they're all dressed up like pirates. It's a festival that's been going on for about 100 years, I guess.
Wow.
And celebrates an invasion by pirates about 100 years ago. So they celebrate it. You know, whatever you can celebrate, you celebrate.
Hey, yeah, you know, alcohol mixes well with absolutely anything, and apparently piracy is one of those things as well.
Yeah.
You know, Brian, obviously the Lightning, they're going to visit Winnipeg on Tuesday night. You know, the top team in the Eastern Conference still. You know, are they beginning to look behind them a little bit in the standings with Boston only 5 points back, 2 games in hand? You know, it seemed like it was going to be a complete runaway, but all of a sudden this Bruins team is beginning to make a little bit of a race at the top of the Atlantic Division.
Oh, no doubt. There's definitely a race on there. Boston's been incredible. What are they, 18 straight without a regulation loss? I think it is. So,
yeah
they've had a tremendous run. I'm sure the Lightning have. They don't talk about it a whole lot. You know, the players are trained not to make a big deal of that. We do in the media, and because that's part of what we do. But I think they're just like, let's, you know, get playing well again. They haven't played very well the last 2 or 3 weeks, actually. So they know they've got some work to do. They've had some basically terrible games, but everybody does somewhere along the line. So they're trying to get themselves righted. They came off a road trip where they had a bunch of wins, but they really didn't play that great still. Their goaltending did, and that's why they won three of the games. But like I said, there's a lot of things to clean up. So I think they're in the midst of that. At the same time, they don't play Boston still for a while yet. So those matchups obviously will be important. We're at an event yesterday, and Steven Stamkos was there, and he basically was asked about that and about, you know, the fact that over the last many years, the team that ends up first overall never wins the cup. And he just kind of chuckled and went, "Oh yeah, we know the history. We're just, you know, focused on winning games night after night, and that's the only way you can do it. And if at the end of the year you're in first place, well, there's nothing wrong with that, that's for sure. But otherwise, it's not that big a deal to them."
Brian, I remember last time we had you on, we asked you about Braden Point and how could we not, with the amazing season that he was having and continues to have, continuing his great rookie year from last year. He's already got 20 goals on the year. How great of a story is that? Is the 21-year-old now joining his teammates at the All-Star game in Tampa?
You know what? It's well-deserved. Complete shock. This kid is just a wonderful kid. He was raised right. His parents did a heck of a job, I can tell you that. He is the most polite, you know, shy, respectful young man, which is terrific. And obviously, he's a great hockey player. He keeps his head down, his mouth shut, and his eyes and ears open. You know, that's the old way they used to say. That's a good way to be. And so he's learned a lot, and he takes it all in, processes it, you know, instantaneously, and he has got skills. I think the biggest thing, which is interesting, he played in Moose Jaw, and even when he came to his first camp with the Lightning Junior, he went through the power skating courses, and I guess he was just, you know, he was a good skater, average to good, but he took all the lessons to heart. He came back his first year, which as a rookie last year, and was a real good skater and really improved. Then this year, he found another gear. So I put him at one of the best skaters in the entire league. I mean, he's got several different gears now. So his confidence level and his knowledge of the game, having been around the circuit for a year now, all that has made a difference. He's got tremendous hockey sense. He's the matchup guy. He's the one that, even though a year and a half in the league, John Cooper puts him out against the top line, whoever's the hottest. He gets the Backstroms, the Crosbys, the Ovechkins, you name it. He gets them all. So that really says something right there. And on top of it, yeah, he's got 20 goals already. At the beginning of the year, based on the way he finished, I thought, well, you know what? He should be a, you know, 20, 25 goal guy, maybe 30, you know, if he has a good year. And then all of a sudden you look at him and I go, wow, 20 goals already, you know, pretty incredible. He's got the skills to do it. So I don't know what his limit is, but all I know is he's a heck of a player.
Brian, Lightning rookie defenseman Mikhail Sergachev has been a healthy scratch the last couple of games. Coach Cooper labeled it a coach's decision. You know, you're a former NHL defenseman, and what do you see in what Sergachev has been able to do this season and how he's handling this stretch of not playing his best hockey?
He's done a hell of a job. He's 19 years old. Came in, didn't show. It's like he had zero pulse. You know, nothing bothers him. Although I talked to him a couple of times, and he goes, oh, yeah, I'm nervous. He's very well-spoken. He's a very bright kid. I mean, he basically learned English in about a year, and he speaks very well. So that tells you something about his intelligence level right there. He adapted well. He's got tremendous offensive skills and bravery. He's bold. He's bold offensively and defensively. He's learning about the league and about reading the rush and all those things that every defenseman has to, whether they're 19 or, you know, 29. That, you know, it's an ongoing process. He's got some pretty good guys to learn from. Victor Hedman's one of the best in the business defensively, and he plays a lot with Anton Strahlman, and Strahlman, you know, can clean up a lot of messes when things go wrong, and, you know, he talks to him a lot. So that's the best way, is you learn more from experience and from your teammates on when to go and when not to go and who's the dangerous guy. That constant communication. He's got the skills, got great feet, really quick, fast skater, very mobile, two tremendous shots, big-time slap shot, and maybe even a better wrist shot. And he's got offense, so that's made a huge difference too. And it's taken a lot of pressure off of Victor Hedman and the rest of them, for that matter, because he does have that offense, and because of that, the Lightning are top three as a defense core in scoring. Now, Victor Hedman's been out for a while now with the injury, and he at the original estimate was 4 to 6 weeks, so that obviously will drop them because he's the number one guy in that department. But Sergachev, I think, maybe tried to do a little bit too much, which is understandable, and he's hit a wall a little bit, and the Lightning have eight defensemen. So it's only fair to the other guys that if he's stumbling a little bit, then he needs to take his turn in the press box, and that's really what's happened over the last couple of games.
Brian Engblom is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're into Winnipeg on Tuesday night to meet the Jets. Brian, Tyler Johnson, you know, coming off a couple down years for the Lightning. Last year, only 45 points. The year before that, 38 points. Banged up in both of those seasons, admittedly. But it was only 3 years ago he was just under a point a game player back in 14-15. This year he's bounced back. You know, he's not quite at the point a game level, but, you know, he's going to probably finish the year somewhere in the 60 to 65 point range. You know, how is Tyler Johnson sort of, he used to be one of the triplets in Tampa Bay. Now he's probably been passed, certainly, by Kucherov and maybe Braden Point. How has he sort of adjusted to a bit of a different role with the Tampa Bay Lightning with different levels of prominence?
Yeah, his role has changed. Last year, he was injured, so that had a lot to do with it. I mean, he couldn't even do a push-up till about January. His shoulder hadn't healed, and his shoulder and arm. So he was really behind the eight ball from that respect. And the team stumbled a lot, and there were a lot of injuries, and he played with a lot of different guys. So this year he came in, healed up, in really good shape. And at the beginning of the year, John Cooper used seven defensemen a lot because, as they said, they have eight on the roster. So he ended up as playing with Killorn and then a different winger all the time. And that's always hard. You know, guys will always tell you that. They want regular line mates. So he went through that process, and then Braden Point was the matchup guy. Johnson was losing a few minutes. So what they did about the beginning of December was they moved him to wing and put him on with Braden Point because he's a terrific 200-foot player. So from that standpoint, he just took off. He doesn't have as much responsibility, doesn't have to spend as much time in his own zone with the centerman responsibilities. And because of that, his offense has really taken off. And he's been, you know, the usual difference maker offensively. So I think, you know, that's what you look at from him. And it's onward and upward from there. It's a terrific combination. And, you know, if something happens and they need another centerman, he can certainly go back to center, and that's his normal position. But it's really freed him up. You know, the smile's back on his face. He's skating really freely, and he's fine in the back of the net. So you need guys like him scoring on a regular basis.
You know, Brian, you mentioned Anton Strahlman earlier. Do you think he gets enough credit for how good of a defensive defenseman he is?
No, he doesn't. But I'm partial to those guys. So I see him play all the time, and I know, you know, I use the phrase before, he cleans up a lot of messes. And not just with Sergachev, you know, it's with whoever he's playing with. When he played last year and the year before, a lot with Victor Hedman, because Victor's not easy to play with. But Victor just swoops around all over the ice because he's one of the best skaters in the game. And he's dynamic defensively. But he doesn't do it in your sort of orthodox backing up, skating backwards kind of style. He's probably spending 75% of his game skating forwards as a defenseman. I think that's where the game is going. If you look at the top defensemen, that's the way it is. And when you're playing against the Connor McDavids and the players that are so fast now, I think it's the right way to play. Because even if you are the best skater, you know, in the league defensively, turning and going with these guys seems like an impossibility. So if you're on the move all the time and skating and angling and skating forward, you have a much better chance. Having said that, it looks different. It means the reads are a little bit different as well, too. So Strahlman is excellent at that. because he has great hockey sense. And that's really what it comes down to. You have to have hockey sense. And as the game is changing and evolving, and I think it's changing and evolving for defensemen more than any other position. So I think, you know, from that standpoint, you have to make changes. And, you know, that's where the game is going. Strawman is equally good at doing that because he can skate forward or he can sort it out as it's coming at him. And that's, so, like I said, that's what's happening in today's game. You have to change. You have to evolve.
You know, Brian, there's so many good individual stories about the Tampa Bay Lightning we could ask you about, but it is, of course, All-Star Weekend, and the eyes of the hockey world have turned towards Tampa Bay. You know, how much validation do you think Jeff Vinnick gets for, you know, being able to keep this team thriving in the Tampa market, and how much does the Tampa Bay hosting the All-Star game really go to solidifying the Tampa Bay Lightning within the community?
You don't have to worry about solidifying the Lightning within the community. They have been solidified for several years already. They've been sold out for several years in a row. Every box is sold, every seat is sold, and has been for several years. The Lightning players and the organization is extremely active. I would hazard a guess more so than any other city in the National Hockey League. They are at events all the time. The players are out doing things all the time. And Jeff Vinnick leads the way in that respect. So they have a tremendous amount of respect here. Jeff Vinnick is along with one of Bill Gates' corporations, redeveloping the whole area down around Amalie Arena. And they are spending literally billions of dollars and in construction of new offices and a couple of new hotels, et cetera. So the city loves him. The fans love him. And he's very philanthropic, very involved in charities, as are all the players. So when it comes to the rest of the NHL, yeah, I hope they know, you know, what he's doing and what's going on here. But, you know, at the same time, as far as the All-Star game goes with Gasparilla, and I'm finally downtown, I'm right next to the arena now. And everybody's dressed up like pirates, and it's Pirates and Pucks weekend. That's what they've been calling it. So it's hilarious. Like, I've been, the last 2 years, I was on a boat, involved in the boat parade following the pirate ship, and it's like Mardi Gras on boats, and it is wild, crazy stuff. So there's supposed to be a couple of 100,000 people downtown here. So people who are in from other parts of the NHL that are here for this event and are going to see all this craziness on top of All-Star Weekend, I think we're going to get a lot of people coming back for Gasparilla in future years because it is a kick. I can't even tell you.
Are you wearing an eye patch?
No, not yet.
Not yet. Maybe in a few hours, right?
Possibly, yeah. I mean,
Brian Engblom is a Tampa Bay Lightning analyst. Brian, appreciate it.
All right, guys. Enjoy.
Thanks. Enjoy Gasparilla. Enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, I will, believe me.
Take care, Brian. Thanks again. When we come back, the latest Trade Center updates, the latest on Jets rumors around the trade deadline. Trade Talk up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Brian Engblom for joining us to talk about the Lightning. In case you missed any of that audio, it'll be available for download on TSN1290.ca, on our website, IllegalCurve.com, or you can just subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to you each and every week. That's the easiest way to do it. This segment of the show brought to you by Zappia Group Realty. That's Frank and Mauro Zappia, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Trade chatter picking up less than a month now until the NHL trade deadline. That's going to take place on Monday, February 26th. A special edition of NHL that this week will be on that Monday to wrap up the day of trade deadline day. The guys, I think it's Jeff O'Neill and Pierre LeBrun, were discussing the Jets and their potential moves at the trade deadline. Here's what they had to say regarding Kevin Cheveldayoff and his plans.
Kevin Cheveldayoff doesn't usually do an awful lot going to the trade deadline. Is this year going to be different?
Well, first of all, I'm tired of this narrative of Kevin Cheveldayoff doesn't make trades.
First of all, the 1 year they did make the playoffs after Atlanta went to Winnipeg, he added Stepniak, he added Tolusti, he added some pieces. They lost in the first round, but he added some pieces. He's been building this team from the ground up, and when you're building, you're not going to be a buyer at the trade deadline. You continue to be patient with their young players. Now they're there, and I'm going to tell you right now, he will add a piece or two before the deadline. He's ready to move some future pieces to give this team a chance to go far in the playoffs. But again, look at some of the players on the ice tonight from the Evander Kane deal. You know, from Myers on, you know, Jack Roslovich, lots of pieces from that Evander Kane deal, which was a blockbuster trade, that are all playing for the Winnipeg Jets. He will make a trade when it's right. I don't think it's fair to say he's a guy that's scared to make a move.
Okay, so Pierre says he's going to make a deal. If he's going to make a deal, what does he need to bring in?
Well, if he does make a deal, here's it's one of those situations, Pierre. I don't think he has to do a whole lot. I think he just has to
bring
in
some... Pretty good
team. Yeah, it's a pretty good team. If you just bring in some grit, some experience, somebody with some cup experience, Gino, other than Dustin Byfuglien, who won the cup in 2010 with the Chicago Blackhawks, you need somebody else who's been through the wars, been through the trenches, that can settle a team down after they're down after two periods and say, guys, don't worry about this or that. Just add some experience to that lineup. They brought in a guy like Hendricks, who I love the experience there, but somebody who has cup experience I think could be real valuable to this group.
That's Jeff O'Neill and Pierre LeBrun alongside Gino Retta. O'Neill saying the Jets need somebody with some more cup experience, which would be true. There's not a ton of experience in the Jets lineup. Dustin Byfuglien has the most playoff experience from his time, of course, with the Chicago Blackhawks. When you know, those guys didn't really bandy about any specific names. It's interesting to note, though, that in Frank Saravelli's trade bait board, which he released a new version of this week, he's got an interesting name down at number 21 on the trade bait board. That's AHL player and Winnipeg Jets prospect Nick Petan. A lot of talk maybe that Nick Petan could be as part of a package deal to bring somebody back to the Winnipeg Jets, probably a bigger name than just a depth forward, than just a gritty, you know, veteran player. So if you're the Jets, would you consider packaging up Nick Petan as part of a deal to bring somebody back at the trade deadline?
Maybe. I mean, Nick Petan straight up is not going to get you a top six forward or a top four defenseman.
I would agree with that.
So when you're talking about trading Nick Petan, I mean, you're going to have to package up a lot with Nick Petan if you're trying to get a top six forward. I mean, you're going to have to throw in probably two more pieces. You might have to throw in a draft pick. But look, I mean, Nick Petan, Dave, by the way, he had a beautiful assist last night. He had three assists last night. He's a point-per-game player with the Manitoba Moose this year. And, you know, he's got lots of NHL experience. But obviously, he's a guy that at this point in his career wants to be playing meaningful hockey in the National Hockey League. Now, unfortunately, there are other players ahead of him on the depth chart for the Jets, and that includes Jack Roslovic, who is younger than Nick Petan. So are the Jets going to possibly move Nick Petan? Sure, but it's all speculation at this point. I think Nick Petan has a bright future in the National Hockey League, Drew, but to start saying that the Jets are going to possibly package up Nick Petan with a defenseman or a prospect or a draft pick, I can't answer that question because I have no idea. Now, you know, as far as I'm concerned, and I said this 2 weeks ago when we talked about the Jets, I don't think that the Jets have to make any major moves. Now, if they package up Nick Petan with a bunch of players, that would be to make a major move. And I've said this repeatedly. Mark Scheifele is going to be back in the lineup, and then you're going to have to make the decision, are you going to send Jack Roslovic back to the American Hockey League? I don't think they should, by the way. I think Roslovic has earned a spot in the NHL with the way he's played. But the point is, I think if you're the Jets, you're adding depth pieces. You're adding a third-line guy, a fourth-line guy, maybe a six or seven defenseman. I don't think that they need to move any of these prospects right now, and that's because they're first in the Central, and they're scoring a lot of goals. So I just don't know if they need to make any major moves, and trade a guy like Petan, because I think Petan's a guy that could play for the Jets in the future.
The Jack Roslovic question, as which you addressed, is something we're going to take calls on starting at 11 o'clock. Has Jack Roslovic done enough in his time in the Jets lineup that he belongs up with the NHL club for the remainder of the year when the team is healthy? That's one of the topics we want to discuss between 11 and 12 when we're going to open up the phone lines.
Drew, I think, I don't have to tell you this, but you know, for a lot of people listening, you have to keep in mind that a lot of these guys on the trade bait board are not going to be traded.
Most of them won't be traded. I mean, the trade bait board, you know, part of this time of the year, it's silly season in that it's for speculation and it's for, you know, truthfully, blind guesses, because always the trade deadline is never quite as impactful as the hype provides it in the month and the 6 weeks leading up to it. It's never as significant as the hype surrounding
it. And Evander Kane's going to most likely get moved. Mike Green is most likely going to get moved. Maybe a guy like Mark Letestu gets moved. But a lot of these guys won't get moved.
The majority of them won't get moved. You're absolutely right, as it's a time where everybody sort of loses their collective minds as part of these random speculation.
Us included.
Us included. We're no better than anybody else, certainly. Dave, Nick Patan, that was a beautiful assist last night, and you got to see his playmaking ability that makes him so tantalizing. He hasn't been able to translate that from the AHL level to the NHL level. There's certainly Nick Patan advocates out there who would say, give him an opportunity, give him a top six opportunity, and let's see what he can do. He hasn't been able to get that opportunity as of yet, and he hasn't really been able to do much when he's had the power play time for the Jets. So how do you see him and his future and maybe a possibility of him being trade bait as we approach the deadline?
I'm kind of with Ez on this one, to be honest with you. I think that Nick Patan on his own isn't going to get you something significant, and perhaps you're just doing something small with a team that wants to get a player who's a complementary player who can definitely, we see his vision all the time. His goal scoring isn't significant probably at the NHL level, but there's no question that he's highly complementary. And when you give him the opportunity, look. Jack Roslovic had no goals, no points coming in, playing on the fourth line, getting more minutes, more opportunities. You put him on the first line, he scores a goal. More minutes, more opportunity, better players. It translates. So, it's easy to judge Nick Patan playing on the fourth line, playing 7 or 8 minutes a game and saying he's not X. But the reality is then you put him onto the first line playing with Blake Wheeler, suddenly he becomes Y. So, the reality is that Nick Patan is a very skilled player. He's got a tremendous amount of skill. Is he going to drive the play by himself? No, I don't think so. But, the fact that he's not a Blake Wheeler, so he doesn't drive the play the same way a Wheeler would. But is he a highly complimentary player who can facilitate a game? Absolutely. I don't think there's any question. Now, are there aspects of his game all around that need work that would perhaps remove him from that potential of having that role in terms of his defensive play? Yeah, he's got some defensive liabilities if you watch him play enough. There's sometimes he can be a little bit laissez-faire, a little in terms of getting back-checking. And that's something that people have to kind of be aware of. Like, when you watch players when you just look at the numbers, Nick Patan's numbers are very good. But the fact of the matter is that you have to watch a player. I think it helps to watch him live to see the totality of their game. And sometimes when you see that, you see the aspects of the game that the coaching staff may not like. So again, there's more to it than just the fact that he's able to put up points at the AHL level. But again, I'm not trying to denigrate him. I just think that there's more to it than meets the eye.
And Dave, I don't know if Pascal is going to let Chevy trade him.
That's a good point. He may need him to help the Moose get to that Calder final.
He's certainly valuable for the Manitoba Moose. 1 month less a day until the trade deadline. We'll see what ends up happening for the Winnipeg Jets and for Nick Patan specifically. When we come back, Emily Kaplan from ESPN.com joins us. Talk to Emily about a recent article about the Seattle Kraken, Seattle Emerald, Seattle question marks. Much more to come. Hour number two up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast,
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. A reminder, 11 a.m. phone lines are going to open, 780-1290. Phone calls for an hour talking about the Winnipeg Jets. We don't do it often, but we're going to do it this Saturday morning. So coming up in 1 hour, phone calls here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We head back to Tampa Bay where we find Emily Kaplan of ESPN.com. Emily, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Just a disclaimer, I'm on the back of a media bus. There might be some background noise.
Well, you tell those media members to keep it down. You're doing a radio interview, and if they want to come back on the show themselves, they better respect the noise pollution right now.
Yeah, or I'll just pass around the phone. You'll get a variety of voices.
That works for us as well. That would be sort of a free-flowing interview style at that point in time.
Who else is on the bus, Emily?
I got Doc Emmerich right in front of me.
Oh, Doc. It's always good to talk to Doc.
Yeah.
Emily,
my buddy Greg Wyszynski.
And Wish. Nice. Say hi to Wish for us at the same time.
P. Diddy.
Yeah.
I wish you got to get hello from these guys.
Okay, there you go.
He says hi back.
Emily, you wrote a great article for ESPN.com recently, pardon me, talking about Seattle and their quest or their journey to maybe, likely, I'm going to say, being the 32nd franchise in the NHL. Is that the impression you got before we delve deeper into the article itself, that you know this city is sort of just raring and ready to go to be the 32nd NHL franchise?
Yeah, at this point it really feels like an inevitability. I mean, 3 years ago when they pretty much kind of started putting Vegas on the map of potentially having a franchise, they told Vegas, look, you can do a season ticket drive and we'll see what happens after that. Well, 3 years later, they skipped a few steps for Seattle. They said, you can have a season ticket drive. You can also formally apply for expansion. And they set a fee of $650 million. So because of that, it really feels like this is something that's going to happen.
Emily, how much has the Seattle ownership group consulted with Bill Foley and the Vegas ownership group as far as what the process was like at this point when they were trying to get an NHL team?
I'm not quite sure how much communication they've had with Bill Foley and his group. I do know they've been in constant contact with Gary Bettman and his office. And, you know, it seems like it's a really good relationship. One of the guys in the ownership group is Mr. Lewicki, who has experience with the Maple Leafs as being their president as well as the Kings. So there's definitely a hockey connection there.
You know, Emily, Mayor Jenny Durkin met with Gary Bettman, I think, on Tuesday. Now, is there a bit of a problem of getting out ahead, you know, kind of making it a public thing beforehand as opposed to with waiting for the formality of them still formally applying?
Yeah, a little bit. She's been interesting, and I had a chance to meet with her. And it's an interesting situation because she actually just became the mayor. So her predecessor is the one that really did the wheeling and dealing for this arena, and she's kind of the one that's going to see it through. But yep, she's, you know, going out in front and having meetings with Gary and is up front of saying she's going to be the one that brings the NHL back to Seattle. And her hope is that she's also going to bring the NBA there, too.
To be a big time to be in Seattle. Emily Kaplan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Emily's with ESPN.com. She covers the NHL. You know, Emily, you know, people don't realize that there's, you know, such a rich hockey history in Seattle. You know, the Seattle Metropolitans won the Stanley Cup, the first U.S. team to win the Stanley Cup back in 1917. You know, is it a surprise that as we sit here in 2018, the NHL hasn't already made forays into Seattle?
Absolutely. Like you said, it's the first U.S. city to win a Stanley Cup. There's a rich hockey history there. There's been minor league hockey there. They support two junior teams. And if you look at some of the cities that the NHL has expanded to while spurning, you know, more logical choices like Seattle or Quebec City, it's kind of astonishing, you know, especially the whole Sun Belt and putting another team in the desert in Vegas. So it definitely feels like a logical fit. And a lot of the people in Seattle are saying, look, if you put hockey here, we can prove we're a hockey city.
Emily, on a lighter note, I'm sure you've seen the potential nicknames for the Seattle NHL franchise. And is it just me, or are some of these nicknames or team names a little bit underwhelming? I mean, Kraken, Emeralds. I mean, I kind of like Seattle Sockeyes myself.
Yeah, no, I didn't realize this is probably the biggest debate in town is what they would name the team. And one of the funniest things I found is people in Seattle are kind of in this arms race to get the rights to these names. There's a kid, he's a Korean immigrant. He came to America, he went to Seattle, Washington University, got his law degree, and worked three jobs so he could fight in law, fight in court to get the name rights for the Seattle Metropolitans. There's also a romance novelist who is fighting to get the rights. I think the Sockeyes is her name, which obviously you didn't like. So there's some interesting choices out there, but even more interesting stories behind the choices.
Emily, you're in Tampa right now, and I believe on Monday you wrote about Tampa Bay coach John Cooper and the second longest tenured coach in the NHL. What do you think he's done to kind of reinvent himself consistently and be able to kind of maintain a connection to his players?
Yeah, one of the most interesting things Coach Cooper told me was that he's always reinventing himself. He said that he can't go to the same well all the time with the guys because it's going to get old. And if you think about it, guys like Tyler Johnson and Paula, like, they've been with him for 7 years. So he really does have to, you know, he understands that act gets stale. And he really relates to guys, and I think that's one of the reasons they're having so much success, that it stems from the coach.
Emily Kaplan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, Emily, the thing about when the NHL went to Vegas, there was already sort of under the radar a little bit of a hockey community in Vegas. A lot of Canadians would go down there and play in youth tournaments. There were youth tournaments taking place in the Vegas area, you know, in the winters. It doesn't take much to get a Canadian to leave Canada in the winter, especially to go to a place like Vegas. What's the amateur hockey scene, the youth hockey scene like in Seattle? Do they have the infrastructure to, you know, start a grassroots hockey program that is always such, you know, the lifeblood to really a community embracing the NHL?
Well, that's really the problem. There is youth hockey in Seattle, and it's grown exponentially over the last decade. There's just not enough rinks. There's only 7 rinks within a 30-mile radius of the city of Seattle. And the problem is, you know, they're at capacity. Land is really expensive in Seattle. It's, you know, become a booming city with a, you know, it's a tech boom. All these Fortune 500 companies are there. Amazon has a huge campus. So it's hard to just even find space, let alone afford it. So the hope is if they bring in a team, that team can, you know, build a practice facility, which can also double as a youth center and do some of the things that, like, Dallas did, where they really, you know, built up youth hockey. And Dr. Pepper had a huge, you know, partnership with them, and that helps. But the hope is that they can do that with Seattle as well, and you'll see more youth hockey players, which grows into a hockey culture. And as you know, that's what becomes a hockey town.
Emily, you just made me thirsty for Dr. Pepper. Back to the 2018 All-Star Game in Tampa. We mentioned you're there right now covering it on the team media bus. Is there a better story at this All-Star Game than Brian Boyle? He had that rare form of cancer that he was dealing with, had to undergo treatments early on the season. Now Taylor Hall can't attend the All-Star Game for the Devils, and now Brian Boyle is going to attend his first All-Star Game as a player.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a better story than Brian Boyle. It's pretty remarkable of what he has overcome this year. It's almost so nonchalant about it, you know, of what he went through the offseason to how he's playing now. So it's definitely the story of this All-Star game.
You know, Emily, turning our attention to South Korea, I know that the buzz is still here for the Canadian men's hockey team, even though it doesn't have the same cachet as when you send the NHL players. What's it like in the States right now in terms of the American players that are going down, both for the men and women's team?
Here in the States, we're really excited for the women's team because they're very competitive. I think there's not much of a buzz about the men's team. You know, we're a country that kind of becomes a bandwagon hockey country for the general fan when it comes to the Olympics. But a lot of it has to do with star power, and we fall in love with guys like TJ Oshie when he has his crazy shootout and things like that. So I think right now it's a little dull. Once they do something to captivate us, I think that people will tune in. But that's not going to happen, and there's not going to be much of a buzz until February, you know, the second week of February.
Emily, we'll let you go on this last question, and you mentioned that, you know, Seattle supports junior hockey in the Western Hockey League. You know, how is the Seattle ownership group sort of going to balance the junior hockey culture that exists in Seattle? And, you know, is there a fear that junior hockey will cease to exist in the Seattle region when the NHL comes to town?
No, I think that they can coexist. It's really, I mean, there's two teams. One is the Everett team, and the other is in Kent. They're actually the Seattle Thunderbirds. And the idea is, look, they're two totally different price points if you want to go to a game. As the GM of the Thunderbirds told me, parking at the NHL stadium is going to be about the cost that it is to go to an entire game for our family. So I think they can coexist.
Yeah, Emily Kaplan covers the NHL for ESPN.com. Emily, can you say hi to the bus on our behalf?
You know what? I just got off the bus.
Missed our opportunity.
Winnipeg says hello.
Emily, thank you for joining us this morning. Have a great time at the All-Star Game.
All right, awesome. Thanks, guys.
Take care. Emily Kaplan of ESPN.com. When we come back, we're going to discuss Connor Hellebuck. He's a restricted free agent at season's end. What is he going to ask for in a contract? What are the Jets going to offer? We'll talk about Hellebuck and his contract status up next. And remember, your call is coming up at 11. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manouk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Reminder, of course, again, taking phone calls at 11 a.m. 780-1290 is when the phone lines are going to open. In the meantime, if you want to reach us in studio, you can do that via Twitter at Illegal Curve, or you can send us a text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. If you send a good tweet or if you send a good text, we might even read it on air. Gentlemen, Connor Hellebuyck, been one of the keys to the Winnipeg Jets' success this season. I don't think I'm telling anything that's a surprise at that point in time. 26-6-7, a .924 save percentage, a 2.35 goals against average. He's in Tampa Bay as one of the Jets' all-star representatives. Good timing for Connor Hellebuyck to have hell of a good year, as he's an RFA at season's end. The Jets have never had this quality of goaltending, and it leaves the Jets in a bit of a conundrum as to what to do with regard to Connor Hellebuyck and his next contract. How do you see Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets' brain trust? How do you see Connor Hellebuyck and his representation approaching these contract negotiations, which will certainly begin sometime soon if they haven't yet begun?
Yeah, it's a very interesting question, Drew, because, you know, as you mentioned, Hellebuyck is having a Vezla-like season. And, you know, this is by far his breakout season in the National Hockey League. And, you know, with Hellebuyck playing the way he's playing and playing the majority of games, we saw him just play four games in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of fans out there that I think that Chevy should just sign him to an 8-year deal. But we know that it's a little trickier than that, as you mentioned. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, if you're Hellebuck's camp, I mean, you could certainly want a shorter term deal, whether that's 2 years, 3 years or 4 years. But I think with Hellebuck's age and the fact that Steve Mason is only signed to a short-term contract,
yeah,
I think if you're Chevy, you want to sign Hellebuyck to probably a minimum 4 or 5 year deal, maybe longer. And guys, we don't see goalies sign 8-year deals like we see forwards or defensemen sign 8-year deals. So I don't think Hellebuck's going to get a 7 or 8 year deal.
Carey Price was the last, I mean, signed the huge contract.
They're
with
very
Montreal.
Rare. Yeah.
Yeah, very rare. You're right. Goaltenders are much more in the 4 to 5 year realm than they are anything longer term than that.
Right. So, I mean, I'm kind of thinking that that's where this is going, that Hellebuyck's going to be signed to a 4 or 5 year deal based on his age, right? He's in his mid-20s right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Jets have some prospects in the system, obviously Eric Comrie being the top goalie prospect in the system, but we know that Steve Mason is only going to be here for a short period of time. Maybe he gets signed to another contract, but he's not going to be here for the next 10 years. So for me, you know, I'm looking at some of the comparable contracts, and you know, Drew, I know you brought this one up, and for me, Braden Holtby is one of them. And I realize that, you know, you could say that Braden Holtby's accomplished more at the NHL level, but there are a lot of similarities between Hellebuyck and Holtby. So, you know, Holtby got 5 years at $6 million a year. So I think we're kind of in that ballpark. And, you know, I realize that, you know, Ben Bishop is another guy that you mentioned.
Not his most recent contract. So,
right.
You know, I sort of did some of the comparables.
4 years ago.
Yeah, this is 4 years ago. And so Ben Bishop, this is when he was still with Tampa Bay, signed a 2-year extension with the Lightning. This is still when he had 1 year left on his existing deal.
Right.
He had signed a 2-year contract that paid him just under $6 million per season. He was coming off of a year where he had a 2.23 goals against average and a .924 save percentage. So the save percentage is an exact parallel with Hellebuyck. The goals against average was a little bit lower than what Hellebuck's is this year. Of course, Bishop is not exactly the same, as he was set to be an unrestricted free agent,
right,
whereas Hellebuyck is an RFA, and Bishop was a little bit older than Hellebuyck was when he signed it. But the Braden Holtby
there's a lot of similarities, yeah, I think, between Bishop, Holtby, and Connor Hellebuyck, Dave. And I think if you're the Jets, I don't know why you would want to sign Hellebuyck to 2 years when you know what you've got. Why wouldn't you want to sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal?
Well, hang on, Dave, before I let you in there, are you sure you know what you have? I mean, Connor Hellebuyck was, I will say, average last year at best. This year he's been tremendous. So if you sign, I mean,
The team was bad last year.
I mean, the Jets have had a cautionary tale about signing a goaltender to a long-term deal who wasn't worth the money that they signed him to. Now, I know Connor Hellebuyck is a better goaltender than Andre Pavlik, but I wonder if you know, Kevin Sheveldayoff approaches the negotiations with a bit of a once bit, twice shy mentality, given how the Pavlik contract ended out.
No, I don't think so. I don't think there's any chance. I think Connor Hellebuyck has done what he's needed to do. I think he's adjusted the way he's needed to evolve his game. I think the Jets as a team have played better. I think the only thing Kevin Sheveldayoff has to be aware of when he backs the Brinks truck up to pay Connor Hellebuyck is just be aware of the fact that he's got Josh Morrissey, Jacob Trouba, Patrick Laine, like a whole host of guys he needs to still pay.
Blake Wheeler.
And Blake Wheeler. So, you know, those are the factors to me. It's not a function of, I don't anticipate them going 8 years, but this to me is like a 5 or 6 year deal for Connor Hellebuyck. I mean, he's going to be your number one goalie from this team's perspective for a number of years to come. And I just don't see that you can compare him to Andrei Pavlik in that instance, from my mind. I mean, I think Connor Hellebuyck is an up-and-coming young goaltender, and I mean, he's showing what he's able to do. Now, again, it's always a function of what the team looks like in front of you. I mean, the reality is, I think he played well last year, in spite of the fact that the team was down to Nelson Noje as one of your defensemen. And I'm not casting an aspersion on Nelson Noje. I thought he played fairly well considering he was not anticipating playing in the NHL last year. But the fact of the matter is they were really banged up. And Connor Hellebuyck would also admit that he didn't play his best, but neither did the team.
You could put a shooter tutor in net last year for the Jets and it wouldn't matter.
That's right. So I think it's a function of, look, he went, did what he needed to do in the offseason, knew that the team wasn't going to probably keep Michael Hutchinson around as the backup, so it was going to be the idea that they were going to bring someone in. Mm-hmm. And so the fact is it galvanized him. It spurred him on. He did what he needed to do, but he's the kind of player who's always adjusted. And again, I watched him a lot when he played in the AHL, and he at the AHL level, he really did, you know, again, adjust and really adapt his game. And then, you know, you go to the NHL, you know, we can't forget the fact that this is it's a massive jump, and goalies develop later. It's not like, you know, we always say forwards go in early, then defensemen, then goaltenders. Goaltenders don't just take over a net. And Connor Hellebuyck's a fairly young guy still, and I think that from my perspective, this is a guy that you build a team around, you know, and you have a solid backup netminder. But, you know, again, like I said, I just think that this is an opportunity for the Jets to have this whole core group, Connor Hellebuyck included, for the next 5 to 10 years. And I think that's something you build your team around.
You know, when Braden Holtby signed his contract extension, as you mentioned Holtby earlier, you know, he was 25, turning 26 the year he signed his extension. So he's a little bit older than Hellebuyck, but pretty similar. You know, he's coming off a very good regular season. He stepped up his game in the playoffs that year with a 1.71 goals against average and a .944 save percentage in 13 games played. So Connor Hellebuyck, for as good as he has been this season, in the regular season, if he has a tremendous playoffs, like Braden Holtby did back in 2015, it could even elevate that contract even higher. I think right now you're looking at somewhere between, you know, Peter Mrazek, who, of course, the contract is now a bad contract, but when he signed his contract extension in Detroit, he was also 24 years old. He was coming off of a playoff season. He was coming off of a year with a 2.33 goals against average and a .921 save percentage. Mrazek got $4 million per season. Holtby, like you said, got $6.1 million per season. So I think you're somewhere in there for Connor Hellebuyck, because I don't think he's as good of a goaltender as Braden Holtby is, but I think he's certainly better than Peter Mrazek. So you're probably looking somewhere in the $5 million range for Connor Hellebuyck, I think, is where his representatives and where Kevin Sheveldayoff will end up landing when this negotiation ends up getting done, assuming, of course, that he continues on the trajectory he's displayed through the first, you know, part of the season this year.
Yeah, and I know that some people like to look at comparables, but, Drew, the fact is, and I don't think Connor Hellebuck's that far away from Braden Holtby, by the way. So when you're talking about Hellebuyck, I mean, this is his third year in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
He's played over 100 games.
Mm-hmm.
His numbers are incredible. I mean, he's second in the NHL in wins.
His numbers this year, yeah.
Yeah, that's what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
no, I thought you meant, I know, yes, go on.
So, I mean, they know what they have. So, yeah, I mean, you could look at Holtby and Mrazek, and you could look at Ben Bishop, but the reality is they know what they have. I mean, they have a great goalie here, and they want to lock him up for 4 or 5 years. So, I mean, again, the numbers, I mean, that's what agents and general managers get paid for. But I agree. I mean, he's probably going to make in the neighborhood of $6 million a year on his next contract. He might make more than that. And the point is that I don't think that they need to sign him to a short-term deal unless that's what his camp wants, because they know what they have. And at his age, I think you want to lock him up long-term. So again, you could talk about, you know, what the numbers are going to be. And obviously that's what we're doing right now, Dave. But I don't know if you necessarily need to look at those comparables because they know what they have.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the fact of the matter is that when his agent goes in there, he's going to be asking. I mean, it's a standard negotiation. His agent's going to be asking for the maximum amount of money. And, mm-hmm. and the fact of the matter is that, again, like I said, the biggest factor for Kevin Cheveldayoff isn't knowing what he has in Connor Hellebuyck, because he knows they've had a time to they've had the time and the opportunity to evaluate him as a goalie, and they know what they have, and they obviously like what they see. And again, them bringing in a veteran goalie in Steve Mason, it wasn't, in my mind, denigrating what they have in Connor Hellebuyck. I think it was just recognition that having two young goaltenders in the system is problematic when one falters, and then you have another one in Michael Hutchinson who wasn't able to pick up the slack when Connor Hellebuyck needed it last year. And so they brought him in, again, not because they said, we don't think Connor Hellebuyck has the ability to be a number one goaltender, but simply because they recognized that they needed two very, you know, solid goaltenders. If in the instance that Connor Hellebuyck had, you know, a bit of a letdown in his play for a bit, which we see time to time in guys' games throughout the season, then you could go to a reasonable backup.
There's no doubt in my mind, and I don't know this for a fact. I haven't asked Chevy this specifically, but I have no doubt in my mind that the Jets management ownership wants to sign Hellebuyck long term. I mean, there's no reason to believe anything to the contrary. I mean, nope. Look at the way he's played this year. Why would you not want to make him your franchise goaltender?
You're 100% right. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's no question that this team isn't thinking this is a one-off. This isn't like a lucky season, and Connor Hellebuck's doing well because the team is doing well. Now, there's no question Connor Hellebuyck is having success because the team is having better success. But the reality is,
he's been a huge part of that. He's been arguably the MVP. You know, for me, I think Blake Wheeler has been the MVP. It doesn't really matter who you think has been more valuable. The fact is, Hellebuyck has been very valuable, and we talked about it. I don't think that Chevy's going to sign him to a 7 or 8 year deal and give him $10 million a year.
Just because goaltenders don't get 7 or 8 year deals.
But yeah, Drew, you're talking about, you know, signing him probably to 4 to 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gonna get paid, and he deserves to get paid.
He's certainly been a key member of a very successful Winnipeg Jets team. It'll be interesting to see how the contract situation plays out, especially in the context of all the other contracts that the Jets need to get signed in the coming off seasons. When we come back, we're going to head out to Finland, like we normally do on a Saturday morning. Going to talk a little bit about Christian Vesalainen. He's tearing things up in the Finnish Elite League. We're going to talk about the potential for the Jets and the Canes to be playing regular season games in Finland. And we'll talk about the Finnish team at the upcoming Olympics. Pekka Jalonen from Ilta Helti newspaper in Finland joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.